Hello, listeners. I wanted to thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just wanted to let you know that if you enjoy what I'm doing here, then it really helps me when you leave a review or a rating on the podcast provider you're using to listen to this, when you subscribe to the show's YouTube channel, or when you become a supporter over on Patreon, where you can get access to bonus episodes, ad-free episodes, and transcripts by pledging to one of the show's patron tiers. And speaking of patrons, I want to give a shout out to Alan Miller. Thank you so much for your support, and I hope that you're enjoying the extra material you now have access to. Hi listeners, I wanted to take a second to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved, and it's all ready to go in 2 minutes with minimal meal prep. I've had some fantastic meals like butter chicken and tomato risotto with Factor, and I've got to say I've been extremely impressed with all of them. They genuinely are restaurant-quality. You'll get over 35 different options to choose from every week if you try out Factor, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, with pancakes, smoothies, and more, there's over 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and ready to go throughout the day. Factor also works around your schedule. You can order as little or as much as you need each week, and they even let you reschedule deliveries any time of when those unexpected somethings happen to pop up. And to top it all off, Factor is cheaper than ordering takeout, so it really is a smart move to try it out. Get started today and get after your goals. If you're interested in trying Factor, head to factormeals.com/anglo50 and use code anglo50 to get 50% off. That's code anglo50 at factormeals.com/anglo50 to get 50% off.
History is the greatest adventure story, but does it ever leave you wondering what the women were doing all that time? This is Lori from the Her Half of History podcast, and the answer is that some women were seizing power, or escaping slavery, or spying for their country, or creating artistic masterpieces, while countless others were doing the laundry, getting married, and wondering why their clothes don't have more pockets. If you would like to hear the stories of women doing all of those things, check out Her Half of History at herhalfofhistory.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not, it's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 65, The Kingdom of Essex, part 2. With the death of Ciara in 688, Essex's tendency towards pagan reaction came to an end. This did not mean that the kingdom was left in peace, however. As part of an alliance with Cadwalla, Essex gained some degree of power in western Kent, allowing Sebbi to establish one of his sons, Swafhed, as ruler of western Kent at some point before 689. This same Swafhed was still ruling in 692 when Witred became king of East Kent, indicating that some degree of East Saxon power in Kent survived Cadwalla's abdication in 688. Sebbi himself ruled Essex until 694, when he finally abdicated so as to enter a monastery. Bede recounts that Sebbi was well known for his piety. Bede also suggests that Sebi's choice to abdicate was partly inspired by illness, which made him fear that his death was imminent. As it turned out, it was, as he died in 695. Sebi was buried in the old St. Paul's Cathedral in London, where he was venerated as a saint by the clerics living there. His grave, unfortunately, was destroyed in the Great Fire of London in 1666, and today is commemorated with only a plaque. Continuing, though, the venerable tradition of East Saxon joint kingship, Sebi was succeeded by his two other sons, Sigehard and Swafred. The precise chronology of their reign is unclear, but it seems to have lasted from 694 to 705. Whether they both reigned together for the whole period is not clear. A major concern for this rule was their relationship with Ina of Wessex. Around 705, tensions were running high between Essex and Wessex, because the former had been providing shelter to the enemies of King Ina, who had been driven into exile. The result of a synod held at Brentford in that year saw Essex back down in the face of West Saxon threats, by agreeing to banish the rivals in return for a guarantee that Ina would not invade Essex. Reading between the lines here, it seems that Essex, under Sigehard and Swafred, felt somewhat threatened by Ina, and perhaps were giving aid to his enemies so as to score points with any other future king of Wessex who might replace him. Probably larger tensions were also at play here, since the evidence of charters makes it clear that Sigehard and Swafred had some kind of relationship with the kings of Mercia at this time. Both Ethelred and Coenred at different times co-signed charters with the brothers, not as overlords but as seeming equals. Given the long-standing rivalry between Wessex and Mercia at this point, it seems natural that Ina would see a threat in the brothers providing support to his enemies. This also raises suspicion that their actions were not entirely innocent, and may have been wrapped up in some kind of plot to undermine Ina, which probably had some kind of Mercian backing. It's also in the reign of the two brothers that we find our first mention of the region of the Middle Saxons, or Middlesex. In one of the joint East Saxon and Mercian charters, land is given for a monastery in the territory that is called Middlesex. This region seemingly existed between Essex and the lands of the Middle Angles, who by the early 700s were firmly part of the Greater Mercia. The exact nature of Middlesex prior to this is not clear. The charter indicates that it was an area subject to at least some East Saxon overlordship, possibly as a buffer zone between Essex and Mercia. Whether it was always a part of Essex or reflects an originally distinct people is not certain. Given the implied difference of the Middle Saxons from the East Saxons, it's possible that they were originally a distinct group, but given the clear pattern we've seen elsewhere for Germanic migrants to travel inland from older coastal settlements, it's entirely possible that the Middle Saxons were descendants of the East Saxons. This doesn't mean that they were one and the same, just as the Mercians were distinct from the East Angles. There is no written evidence, though, for an independent Middle Saxon kingdom. Quite probably, the Middle Saxons existed as more of a collection of tribal groups that came under the overlordship of Essex before they had a chance to establish a kingdom of their own. By the time that they enter into the written record, Middlesex had become a district of Essex, possibly allowing for the prevalence of joint kingship, with one king being the sub-king of Essex and the other of Middlesex. Whether it's a coincidence that the reign of Sigehard and Swafred ended in the same year as the 10th synod with Wessex is not clear. Neither is the fact that they were succeeded by Offa, the son of Sihara, whose father had on the whole been friendly to Wessex, more so than Sebi had been. This Offa, Bede claims, was a beautiful and pious youth who was wildly popular with his people. This kind of encomium might possibly reflect Offa's sympathies to the Wessex, given Bede's well-known disdain for the Mercians. It's also very interesting that Offa doesn't seem to have been a member of the S dynasty of East Saxon kings. hence why his name is Offa and doesn't start with an S like so many of the others do. What, if any, is the significance of this isn't clear. It's entirely possible that Offa was a part of the dynasty, it just didn't have an alliterative name. But it is interesting to note that he breaks from the, by that point, incredibly well-established tradition of having alliterative names. Without knowing more about his background, it's impossible to really say anything more about this other than note that it is strange. Despite his popularity, Offa only reigned for about 4 years, before in 709 going on pilgrimage to Rome with Coen Red of Mercia, where the pair became monks and later died. With the death of Offa, we reach an important point in East Saxon history, because Offa is the last king of Essex mentioned by Bede, so from here on out we are on much patchier ground in terms of source material. Matters are only made more complicated by the fact that there are no surviving East Saxon charters from later than the early 8th century. So from here on out, the history of Essex is extremely difficult to reconstruct. We can, though, do our best, and that's what I'm going to try and do for you now. Consequently, we know the names of several later East Saxon rulers, but we have hardly any dates or information that we can know say about them with any certainty. We know, for instance, that after Offa, Essex was ruled by Swafbert and Selred. Swafbert died in 738, according to the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, and Selred died in 749. They must then have been highly successful kings to achieve reigns of multiple decades, yet very little is known about them. Judging from surviving royal genealogies, Selred at least seems to have come from a new line of the descendants of Sled. Selred was succeeded by Swithred, who genealogies indicate was the son of Siahed. Clearly then, as all of these names make it very clear, the system of joint kingship in Essex allowed for multiple royal lines to coexist and share power, something that does seem to have set Essex apart from other kingdoms at this time. It's just frustrating that we can say so little about it. Things do become ever so slightly clearer during the reigns of Athelbald and Offa in Mercia, since Essex seems to have come under increasing pressure from Mercia at this time, since Athelbald and Offa produced a large amount of coinage and charters. This means we can make some suggestions about what was going on in Essex at this point. It appears that by the time of Athelbald, Essex had been severely reduced in size by Mercian expansion. Charters survive from Athelbald, in which he grants land in Middlesex and Hertfordshire with impunity, with no reference to any kings of Essex, indicating that these territories were no longer de facto part of Essex. London too became fully separated, or mostly separated, from Essex under Athelbald's reign, as the Mercian king freely granted trading privileges in the city, again with no reference to Essex. Both Athelbald and Offa also set up their main mints in London, highlighting the economic and bureaucratic importance of the city to their Mercian economies. Yet while Essex was mutilated by Mercian expansion, the kingdom itself seems to have remained independent. There are no Mercian charters from Essex itself, and we do still find some scanty references to East Saxon kings during the high tide of the Mercian supremacy. That there was some continuing independence may be indicated by a small series of shaitas produced in the early 8th century, whose distribution is focused mainly on Essex and London. One side of these coins bears a wolf head design that was also found on coins issued by Athelbald. However, the other side bears what has been described as a sphinx by some scholars. These odd coins have been used as evidence for an East Saxon coinage minted with Athelbald's consent, but circulating within Essex. If this is the case, then it would be direct evidence for both East Saxon subjugation to Mercia, as well as some continued degree of East Saxon independence, since clearly the East Saxon economy and bureaucracy must have still existed in some way. How Essex fared under Offa is not known. If you'll recall, Offa had a tendency to remove the kings of his satellite kingdoms in favour of direct rule. In many cases, this resulted in the death of those kingdoms. They were never again fully independent from Mercian rule. Following Offa's death, though, the S line of East Saxon kings was still going strong. Siarich I witnessed a charter of Offa's son Egfrith as king of the East Saxons shortly before going on pilgrimage to Rome. His son Siared also witnessed charters of King Coenwulf in 811 using his father's same title. In some later charters, he does seem to have been demoted to a dux, so whether Essex remained fully independent under Mercia is unclear. Ultimately, however, it was the West Saxons who ended East Saxon independence. In 825, following Egbert's victories over the Mercians, the East Saxons were one of the kingdoms who formally submitted to West Saxon overlordship, thus becoming part of Egbert's Greater Wessex. This was not quite the end for Essex, though. Recall that I said Siarich was Siarich I. This naturally implies that there was a Siarich II. This Siarich appears in a single lease of land made in Hertfordshire, dated to between 829 and 837. This lease was made by King Wiglaf of Mercia, but it includes among its witnesses Siarich, King of the East Saxons, who is, on the other hand, also identified as one of Wiglaf's ministers. It seems from this, then, that Mercia was playing some role in keeping the memory of an independent Essex alive, even after 825. This is somewhat fitting, since the kings of Essex, more so than many other kingdoms, seem to have made a conscious effort to ally themselves with Mercia prior to the dawn of the Mercian supremacy. This may explain why they perhaps received preferred treatment from Athelbald and Offa, although this is speculation since, as I said, we don't know very much about what was actually happening in Essex at that time. The alliance was so close that even after Essex ceased to exist independently, Wiglaf was still propping up the memory of the kingdom. This is a surprisingly touching act of companionship in a world where treachery and conquest was so very common. But thus ends the story of Essex, and with it the Heptarchy. We're not quite done with the pre-Viking kingdoms, though. There are still a few smaller kingdoms that I want to touch on, but they don't necessarily warrant multiple episodes each. Once they're done, we can finally turn to the Vikings and all that came after. Something that I'm sure you're all very much looking forward to. But for now, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast.
Hello, my name is Peter Zablocki, and I'm a historian, author, and college professor. I'm thrilled to invite you to check out Evergreen Network's History Shorts podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, join me on a journey through time, exploring the little-known and hidden gems of history. In each bite-sized episode, I'll dive into my original research to bring you intriguing historical curiosities you've probably never heard of, uncovering the fascinating stories that have shaped our world, from forgotten figures to overlooked events. And the best part? I've condensed all this historical goodness into manageable chunks, perfect for your on-the-go lifestyle. Whether you're commuting to work or squeezing in a quick break, History Shorts fits into the little time you probably think you don't have. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the History Shorts podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.